Comic Book Legion podcast. I am Mark, and I have energy. I am not sick. I read a full slate of comic books. I'm talking with my buddy Clay. What's good, buddy?
Dude, it is awesome. You know, I was really worried that we... Because usually when we, you know, first get connected here, like every Wednesday or Thursday, we're always like, okay, what books did you read? Because we never get together and be like, hey, we're going to read this, this, and this, you know? We're always just reading on our own and then like, hey, did we read the same stuff? No? Okay, let's go on with it. But this one...
I kind of prefer doing that. And the only reason why is because I don't want anyone to like... I don't want us to be forced to read something we don't want to read.
That's true. Well...
Maybe in terms of like preparing, I'm not really a preparer.
Yeah.
So I'll go with the flow kind of guy. So that, I mean, I'm sure there's positives to it and there's negatives to it. But when it comes to reading comics, I mean, you do it sometimes, but I think it's just because of, you know, friggin' Tony. You know, when it comes to hate reading.
I will say, I thought I was going to hate read a book this week. And the first few pages actually weren't bad. It got me into the book.
What a tease.
I know.
That's a tease. I'm sure nobody knows what book you're talking about.
We'll definitely talk about it later on. But, you know, surprisingly, there was one thing that really bothered me, and unfortunately it bothered me enough to, like, last throughout the rest of the book. And so I was just like, you know what? Fair is fair. I'll give him a 6. I told you, I texted you, a 6.5 or 7. Really depends on how we talk about it today.
So it's a male reader. It's a male writer.
Yes.
Since you said he.
Yes.
Hmm.
Which doesn't help because every single person that we're talking about today, as far as writers, are all male.
Dun, dun, dun. See? So I'm sure nobody knows what book we're talking about.
Exactly.
Anyways, I know we don't talk movies, but, well, what do you think of this recent casting of all this, like, these Batman the cast members?
I don't know how I feel about Andy Serkis being Alfred. You know, and it's, I think it's because most of the movies that I've seen him in, he's never been like a clean cut, proper person, you know? He's always been a little grungy, a little evil looking, a little mean. And so, like, I can't picture him being either a half balding Alfred or a, you know, young, you know, mild mannered Alfred. It just sounds weird to see Andy Serkis in that role. Or to imagine him in that role.
I mean, unless we're gonna, unless we probably get more of like the military aspect, so you kind of have more of the, like, the gruff.
Yeah.
Where he's got the beard and he's probably not as tame as, you know, as we know him as.
Yeah.
Kind of like a younger version of Jeremy Irons.
So,
because Jeremy Irons looked like he had,
you know,
that military
to that's him. True. Yeah. Would you say it's, would you recognize that as an Alfred from, like, the Earth One book by Geoff Johns? Like that kind of hardened, you know, military guy that is training, like, somewhat training Bruce as well?
Yeah. Like, I think I can go for that. Same thing as, you know, with Colin Farrell with Penguin. I mean, he doesn't match the I can't see him as the chubby Oswald. But I saw somebody, I don't know who posted it, but kind of like saying that they can definitely see him as, like, the Telltale.
Yes.
I think it was the Telltale.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this looks, this works.
Yeah.
And Colin Farrell's really good. I mean, I really like him. He's come a long way.
I recently watched, again, I've seen it before, but Abby had never seen it. I recently watched Saving Mr. Banks, the Disney movie.
Okay.
And the female writer that created Mary Poppins, like, it's really about her and her backstory. Well, Colin Farrell plays her father. And I was just like, gosh, like, it was another role that you're like, you know, he's not one of those, you know, badass, like, sniper, you know, because, like, what was it, SWAT that he was in? You know, he's not...
Yeah, SWAT, I think that was, like, his, yeah, that was, like, his coming out party.
Yeah.
Him and, like, maybe Jeremy Renner.
Yeah. That wasn't, like, he wasn't like that, or he wasn't, you know, in his other superhero role, Bullseye, you know, he's not that kind of badass either. He's just, like, in that movie, he is a alcoholic father, but he hides it from his kids, so he's still very playful and stuff with them, and then behind the scenes, he's a drunk. And so to see him do that and play that role compared to most recently what he's been in Fantastic Beasts, you know, two completely different things. So I'm excited to see what he does to the Penguin role, if he actually gets it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, I'm curious. I was like, oh man, I like it. The casting list is starting to really starting to shape
it
out
is,
quite nicely.
It is like huge with star power. So
yeah, and then I think it was like Justin Kroll mentioned that I guess they were, when it came to Harvey Dent, they were trying to get somebody from the TV show Succession, part of the Roy family.
Yeah, I didn't know who any of those were.
Which makes me think, have you ever seen, here we go, I'm drawing a blank. With Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, the movie with When the Economy Crashes.
Where his Steve Carell's, like, he, like, divorces his wife and everything?
No. Oh, crap. Never mind.
I didn't know Steve Carell and Ryan Gosling made another movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Is it Get Short? The Big Short.
Oh, The Big Short. Okay, yeah.
With Christian Bale. Yeah. This is like, you know, like they have the four stories, Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I've seen parts of it. I haven't watched it all the way through.
Okay, yeah, like that's one of my favorite movies. Well, in that movie, in part of Steve Carell's team, he has like one guy who's like a hard ass.
Yeah.
And he's like the guy that, the no BS kind of guy. Well, I have a feeling that he was the one that, you know, Matt Reeves was looking for. Because when you actually go on Google and you look at the Succession cast and you see who's in the Roy family, he's the only guy that stands out.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I think he would have been a great one. So I'm curious to see, you know, who they go for Harvey. But yeah, I just wanted to know your thoughts when it came to, because I know we don't do movie stuff.
Well,
but
you know, talking about thoughts, because as everybody knows, I also do a podcast with Juice from the Box, the YouTuber, Batman News Weekly. You asked us the question, a really, really, really hard question. Because I will admit, I could not find an answer. His answer, he felt, was a little bit of a cop-out. Our only rules is that we couldn't... So the question that Mark asked us was, if Batman were to have complete prep time for a fight, who would he still lose to with prep time? And our rules were we couldn't use Joker and we couldn't use the Batman Who Laughs. Because those are just like... Joker is basically his equal, and the Batman Who Laughs right now has already proved that he's like 15,000 steps ahead of Batman to the point where it's almost annoying. So those two characters were, you know, you couldn't choose those. I couldn't find any characters after that. Who would you choose?
Honestly, when I thought of it, that just popped up in my head, but I never gave it a thought.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I never gave it a thought. I had no idea.
Yeah, so
it's like, I mean, I wish I actually had an answer if I actually gave it time. But when I read it, I didn't want to be like the guy that you were kind of like reaching out like, hey, let's ask a question, you know, Batman related. Yeah. For some reason, everybody talks about Batman with prep time. So I don't know why, but that popped up in my head. But I'm not the type of...
It was a good question because it actually got us stumped and we were really thinking about it. Juice's answer for it was Catwoman. Now, the reason why is he's always been a little bit softer with Catwoman in regards of when she was a villain and, like, stealing and stuff like that. You know, he's beaten the crap out of Harley. He's beaten the crap out of Ivy. He's beaten the crap out of a lot of other female villains. He's never really beaten the crap out of Catwoman, like, ever. And she always uses that, you know, to help her get away or to at least steal one more diamond behind his back or whatever. So
yeah,
that was his answer. So,
I mean, it's a good one.
Yeah.
It's definitely, I would think, like, outside of the box.
Oh, yeah.
Because you would try to think of the more powerful beings or something.
Oh, that's
like
what
that,
I did. I was like, Apocalypse? No. Brainiac? No. Mongul? No. You know? So.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. Kudos. Yeah, I'll try to give it thought. I don't give these things thoughts. That's my issue. But yeah, let's jump into some comics that we read this week. There were a lot of Year of the Villain like tie-ins, but I think that we've gotten to the point where we're deep enough into this story with Scott Snyder that we don't really need some of these little minor tie-ins.
Yeah.
At least I don't. There was also like a King Shazam, which is with Batman Superman, kind of like a tie-in. That's another one. I mean, I don't think there's much to you. I don't think you need to know much about King Shazam besides knowing that he's infected.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really care about his side story. I could see here that it looks like he was confronted by like Mary Marvel. So I guess the Shazam family was trying to maybe get him out of it.
Yeah.
And he's just fighting within them. I'm like, okay, whatever. It just seems like, okay, it could be a good book. I mean, I did see the art by Joe Bennett. So if you're a big fan of like Immortal Hulk, maybe you would possibly love the look of the book, but I kind of feel like I know what the story is going to be. And this seems more of like those little cash grabs with a very popular story, which is the Batman Superman series right now.
Yeah.
But let's jump into Lois Lane, number 5, Greg Rucka, Mike Perkins, Paul Mounts on art. This was more along the lines of the spirit of what the Lois Lane book kind of like started with. Which it felt very hard, you know, hardcore journalism.
Yes.
And I liked it. I think that these are strong points of Greg Rucka. He's very good at telling these kind of stories. It was kind of like, I guess, like a nice change of pace because you know that the last like two issues of Lois Lane have felt very crossovery, which is something that bothered you.
Yes.
That, you know, it's kind of like taking away this could be some, you know, interactions that you could be seeing in the other books, which is true. Like, I get that. So this is going back to, you know, the heart of everything. And I don't know, I really enjoyed it. I love the beginning, kind of like the thought of kind of like the super fan that has many opinions and kind of like conversing with Lois in regards to what's real journalism, what's kind of like what journalism is nowadays, where people kind of can just throw things out there. And you have Lois, who's very, you know, she's very old school. She's like, you do understand that this is, I don't have hundreds of journalists and, you know, economic papers, you know, trying to figure this stuff out just so that I can throw. These things are fact checked. She's like, yeah, but okay, but that's you.
I like how offended but, you know, she was with the statement that this lady was talking to her, you know, with, you know, oh, people are just making up things, you know, they're saying this and that. And you're right. She says, you know, I'm not looking through these, you know, tax reports for fun, you know? And that's when the lady was like, yeah, she says, what does she say? She says, that's what you do. It's just, I mean, you say you're not allowed to do it, but who keeps you from doing it anyway? And so, you know, it's just a real push for what's going on nowadays with media and everything else.
Yeah.
It really
And they chose a character like just smug enough to kind of be like one of those people that you're like, God, I just want to like break your glasses. Like, I think the art, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Mike Perkins' art. There's times that I like the dark and grittiness of it. But then there's just times, like, you'll see later on with the way that he drew, like, Clark, that it kind of...
Yeah, and that's exactly the point that I was going to bring up. His best parts of this issue is with the question, when it's supposed to be a little bit dark and gritty and, you know, but with the parts with Lois and, you know, the Daily Planet with Perry and Clark, I couldn't get into it. It's just... I feel like the art has kind of gone downward since the beginning of the series.
And I mean, I think that normally happens because, you know, usually the first issue, you would think that they have a little bit more time.
Yeah.
And then after, things start to get a little bit more rushed. I didn't mind really any moments with Lois. I mean, I've bought the art enough where I kind of know what the world is and what I'm, supposed to be looking at. But I will say that I was totally thrown off with the Clark one. That was like, oof, that one's really bad.
Yeah.
But I did have some questions in regards to mainly with the Renee Montoya part. Now, the gentleman here who was coming in who had the money, and you can kind of see that he's talking to like one of the, I don't want to say, to one of like the right-hand men of whoever he is meeting in regards to giving this money. Now, the way that he was speaking, it was in regards to if he was at that bar when the shooting went down. Now, did that guy that got shot when Lois was there and she was trying to figure out who was who? Like, who was this hit for? Was this towards the witness? Or, the guy there doing a deal? Or was this hit towards her? Is this the guy? Like, did he survive it? Was that, like, all, like, a ruse or something?
I have no clue. I didn't go back. You did?
I did not go back to see if this is the same guy. Because he was kind of talking about, like, hey, she was there, like, she wasn't supposed to be there. I thought you guys were professionals. You guys, like, completely screwed this whole part up.
All right, I have it right here. Let's see. Lois Lane, number 2 was the issue. Let's see if he looks the same. You know what? I haven't got to it yet, but I'm pretty sure this is the...
Or was he just another guy that was there that was supposed to make the transaction, but the guy that he was supposed to make the transaction with is the one that died?
I think it's not even him. What the heck?
Okay, so I'm guessing he was supposed to drop off to the money that got killed.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. That
will be my guess, because that part kind of threw me off. And I guess it's because I believe Lois Lane is a monthly, so yeah. Now it's like... It's. I guess my brain has gotten so used to reading a book every other week that, you know, not reading a book for a month, it's like, wow, I feel like I have read 100 books since this book came out, so it's a little tough to keep up. But I do agree. I love the Renee Montoya part. I thought that's really smart. Even to a point, I like how she's... I don't know. I like her dynamic with Lois. I like that even though she knows that she's taken, she's kind of like flirty.
Yeah.
Like she's, like, I like that. I like that they have like that cool little repartee.
Well, I mean, you were the one that thought that Lois was going to play for the other team back in issue 3.
I 100% thought that Lois, man, because there's been that whole thing that, you know, with Bendis been teasing. I mean, do we still know why Lois was hiding? No. Like, we still don't know what that mystery is, so it's just that one, I really thought we were going into, like, this Days of Our Lives kind of thing. So here we are, and yeah, Lois, it ends in a really cool way, besides Renee Montoya and her really cool, she's tapping into her inner Batman
with the interrogations. I really like that. I like how she was like, you know, there's this guy in Gotham. You may know him. He's called Batman, or the Batman. And
like he hasn't really figured out his articles yet.
And she's like, you know, usually with hardened criminals, he uses the height to really scare them, but you're not a hardened criminal. So, you know, I'm just going to do this. And then she says, you know, that's a lot of money you had there. Whose death is worth that much? And I was like, oh man, this is going to like, that was intense. I really enjoyed that. But, I mean, honestly, the only thing I have to say negative about this book was those few pieces of art in the beginning and throughout the book, except for the Renee Montoya parts, dude. It looked really awesome. I love the way that they play with, like, the black backgrounds with the blue,
the blue lighting, a little essence. Yeah.
Really, really awesome.
Yeah, and I will say that, I mean, although the art did bother... the moments with Perry talking with Lois, it was an important conversation because with Lois, when she was on the plane in the beginning, she was heading to Washington meeting someone of importance in regards to trying to figure out what happened to the missing the missing journalist who ended up dying, and what's going on there. And it looks like there has been reported that there is a memo. So there is some sort of like a journal that's going on that has all these important documents. And but of course, Lois, because this lady does not want to have her name on this report, Lois has to go into a deeper dive.
Yeah.
To make sure that all the stuff is sourced and fact-checked and all that kind of stuff. So I, even though the moments of me seeing Clark, because there was a part here that Clark, I mean, I don't want to say, man, but he looked like a pedophile. Like when you see him walking away and saying like, "Not even Superman can stop me, Chief." I was like, God,
he looked really like a like one of those crazy serial killers.
Yeah, yeah, he looked. I was like, man, this does not look like Clark at all.
Yeah,
but pushing that aside. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I guess I can agree more with you now in regards to the stories in the past of interrupting, because I forgot how captivating this mystery was.
Yeah.
And this is Greg Rucka's like bread and butter, so it's like, you know, I absolutely enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, talking about a book that you kind of teased at the beginning of the show, talk about a surprise. Now, I will say, I'm not going to say it in a surprise in terms of like, whoa, this is the greatest thing ever. But surprise in terms of us liking it as, I mean, I figured I was going to like it more than you just because I tend to like things more than you do. but besides that, you know, I'm surprised. What got me surprised was that we actually scored it like around the same.
Yeah.
Which is Legion of Superheroes. This is the first issue. This is kind of the beginning of everything. And, you know, I kind of want to know what your thoughts are. So if you wanted to take the lead on this.
Yeah, one. You know, so it opens up with the Bloodhaven sewer system. Excuse me. This hero is chasing the ship. He is beating up some people. He's looking for this, like, containment thing. And this guy, Mordru, I'm not familiar with Legion, you know, backstory and characters. So if I get any of these guys wrong, you know, don't at me. But
I'm one of those guys that totally appreciate with the Legion of Superheroes that they always put the little names on the back.
Yeah,
and I love how they kind of addressed it here because I am also somebody that, although I love the Legion, I can tell you that I read the Legion outside of the stuff that Superman was involved with it.
Yeah. Exactly. Because
besides that, I've always found, I'm like, wow, there's too much history, and there are way too many characters for me to get involved with any of them. So I'm with you in terms of very elementary knowledge in terms of the, outside of like, you know, the main cast that you tend to always see.
And, you know, there's more heroes that come in for backup, and, you know, we find out that the item that they are looking for is actually an artifact, and that is Aquaman's trident. Then we jump to John and the rest of the Legion. And this is where it goes downhill for me. Like, not immediately, but almost immediately. You know, the whole thing with the hologram with their names popping up behind them or whatever. I really don't like the fact that Bendis always feels the need to be a little bit of fourth wall breaking. And address things like that are like, you know, because usually if, you know, in any other comic, it would be more of like a narration box telling you who it is. This, he's actually making it in the comic in real life or whatever, where everybody sees their name. And that bothered me a little bit.
Like I didn't find that much of a complaint because I kind of see it as you saw Jonathan mentioning, like, he's like, whoa, there's a lot of you.
Well, yeah.
Like he kind of mentioned, so I think it was one of their, it's like a friendly way of saying like, oh, well, you know, and that's how they kind of introduced it. Like, I thought that he did it clever enough where he's overwhelmed by all the people that are like meeting him, throwing him, you know, just like throwing themselves onto him. So I like that part, but it's also as somebody who reads like Legion work, you're kind of like, oh, I get it. I see what he's doing. But for those people who are jumping into this Legion and this is their first book, I mean, I don't know. I felt like it would have been weirder if there was a huge narration box, because I felt like that would have been more along the Bendis lines of wow, you're just throwing a huge info dump of what this could be.
Yeah, but like
instead of it being like a quick panel.
At the same time, like not everybody's name popped up here, you know? So it's
normally the ones that popped up would be the ones that were talking.
Yeah. So like I wouldn't expect there to be like a whole page full of narration boxes or anything. But you know, that's besides the point. The very next thing is what bothered me. You know, John notices something in the air, and, you know, and this plays off of both John and Brainiac 5. John says, up in the sky, and then, of course, Brainiac's like, is it a bird? And then everybody's like, dude, really? Like, really? Are y'all really?
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm sorry. And then they talk about this glass that's around the city. And John says, I have a real problem with being in a bottled city. It's a thing with my people. This is where I wanted to punch Bendis in the face. Bendis wants to crack a joke about this bottled city of Kandor when he himself was the one who killed everybody in the bottled city of Kandor. And yes, you can say that John, in passing, has probably heard about the bottled city of Kandor by his dad, but he doesn't know anything about that city enough to have a real problem with being in a bottled city because he's never been in a bottled city before.
Well, I mean, I guess this can always be one of those things in those off the panel kind of things where I would be highly surprised that Clark has never taken him to like the fortress and kind of given him an entire education in regards to his people. So, I mean, I didn't take it as with him saying that. I didn't take it as like a joke based on because of his face in terms of more worry.
Oh, no.
But I can kind of see what you're.
It's Bendis though, and he knows that in his mind that's him cracking a joke. That's like, "Oh, you know that city of Kandor that I killed? Look, haha."
Well, I mean, I guess that's just the way that people read it. I did not one like at all take that as a joke. I took it as like, oh crap, that's true. Like that's actually a really good observation in regard. Yes, Bendis was the one responsible for doing it, so I could kind of see that he's just connecting this to a story that he has done as well. Which, you know, obviously every writer has their own continuity. So I figured as much, but I took it as like, oh, this is actually going to be a really big issue coming now. I will say, in terms of bothering, this had moments of, like, the Super Sons, where Jonathan at least three other times mentioned, I'm in a bottled city.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Okay, that, when he said that, like, multiple times, okay. That, I'm like, all right, you've already established your worry. I don't think that you have to now just say it many times.
Oh, well,
that one,
I mean,
okay.
That's the thing with Bendis. I mean, because at the same time, there's at least three or four different characters that repeat the exact same thing, one bubble after the other. And I don't know why Bendis is living on a skipped tape, like on repeat his entire life, because people...
I see, for that, when you're having like those multiple people there, I just feel like there's multiple people so excited that they have Superman's son on the team that just so many people want to answer his question. So that's why it kind of sounds like it's...
But it's from the same person.
I don't know. That's just...
That's the problem. It's from the same person that are, like, repeating
themselves. All right, so which panel are you talking about, then?
So, like, John looking at the different, like, cities of the 31st century. Where is Gotham? No Gotham? And, like, it can't just be, where's Gotham? Oh, here's the answer. Okay, cool. Like, Bendis can never let anybody actually receive an answer. Somebody always has to say something multiple times before that answer comes in, you know. And don't get me wrong, because
I think you're nitpicking, but okay.
Well, it's something that I should assume is already going to be in this book, because it's been in every single Bendis book ever, so it's not necessarily... Like I said, I gave this book a 6.5 or 7, you know, somewhere between there. You know, I would put the score anywhere between there. There was one part where he actually broke the fourth wall that I really hated. Because I hate fourth wall breaking with characters that shouldn't break the fourth wall. Okay. I can't find it here, but I know I made a comment about it, like, on Twitter or something. Jeez, let me see if I can find it. You want to go ahead and put your thoughts to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that with this story, I mean, I don't know, man. I thought that this was a good story, and I like that when they kind of educated Jonathan, and, you know, they even kept on mentioning a lot of times, like, Saturn Girl, she's like, whenever Jonathan's having a question, oh, well, we prepared, like, an orientation for you, because it looks like things are happening so fast that they're never able to actually give Jonathan a, you know, a proper orientation, which must be very overwhelming when you're going 1,000 years into the future. But they kind of did mention a little bit in regards to what Earth is and what's left of it. And you're kind of seeing what New Earth is, or pretty much what's left of planet Earth. And one of the things that they need to do is, in one of their missions is that they want to go back in time to save the planet Earth. I mean, yes, we did see a little bit of little teases of Rose, which Rose was really, like, the main character for the
yeah, I...
What was the Legion of Superhero? What was that tie-in called again?
Millennium?
Millennium.
I ignored her, so...
Yeah, like, the DC Millennium. I mean, clearly she's going to be playing something, so you kind of have to see that. So I'm really curious to see what's happening there, because after that, while they were still trying to give them a little bit more of a crash course, that is when an impending threat is now on its way to their world, which is New Metropolis, whatever you want to call it. And that is when you have the Haraz, who are one of, like, the worst of the worst. They are coming back to reclaim what is theirs, which is the Aquaman Trident. So it looks like Jonathan is right in the middle of the, you know, the thick of things and getting this worked up. So, I mean, I was a little bummed that I didn't get to see Mon-El. I mean, you see him, like, in back panels. But Mon-El, as I mentioned in the previous episode, I mean, he's one of my favorites just because of that James Robinson story. So I really hope that he's just not someone thrown behind, because, honestly, I'm more interested in him than any other character in this book.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm really following it. Outside of, I know Bendis has a really big influence in the DCU, so I figured that this is definitely gonna, you know, take place with a lot of things that we're currently reading. So I feel like it's one of those that you have to read to kind of know what's going on. But not necessarily, because I guess you can kind of just learn on the fly. But overall, it wasn't a great issue, but I thought it was a solid start for a number one. I think I think Bendis did what he wanted to do, which was kind of throw us into the thick of things, let us learn a little bit without it being as much of an info dump as I thought. I thought this book was going to have at least 1,000 words a page just to try to educate people on what is the 31st century,
what is the Legion of Super. It wasn't that bad. That is coming in issue 2 or 3. Like,
well, I mean, I would see, like, normally I would say yes, but I feel that it's probably, it might be a little later, because you can see that next issue, it looks like it's going to be more of an action-packed. But I can clearly see that when things slow down, I mean, I would have figured more, like, after I read this book, like, if they were just teaching him the world, and maybe the issue would have ended with it being a bottled city, and him mentioning, oh, like, I'm not good with bottled cities with me and my people. Like, because then I would have been like, oh, man, okay. So then I figured we would have gotten, like, a huge info dump on what happened with the bottled city of Kandor and all that kind of stuff. So, it was good. Not great.
Yeah.
Nothing really bothered me, but nothing really excited me. So that's kind of like why I'm just, you know, but that's not bad either.
Yeah, I actually couldn't find the fourth wall break, but I know it's in there. You know, that was something that he's recently been doing with these characters, and it's been kind of bothering me, because, I mean, not every character needs to break the fourth wall. I know it's a very golden age thing, and Bendis likes to live in that silver golden age era with his writing. So, I mean,
there's nothing wrong with that.
I mean, when it has nothing to do with the character or the way that character is supposed to act, like it bothers me. So,
well, I mean, this is an entirely new Legion of Superheroes, so we don't really know who any of these characters are.
But is it though? I mean, Saturn Girl has been around for how long?
The Saturn Girl that we knew went bye-bye with Geoff Johns.
Well, you know, everybody says, everybody is saying that book isn't going to be in continuity anyway because of, you know, certain things that are going around. It's all up to how you perceive things.
But Bendis has said that this is a completely new reimagining. He mentioned that a while ago, that this is not the Legion of Superheroes that we have known.
I know that, but I mean, you can't say it's brand new when the character has been around for so long, you know? Now, you could say that it's a brand new series because it's been renewed from, you know, the New 52 when they actually had an ongoing series. Yes, I understand that. But these characters have been around.
Well, yeah. No, that part I get. But I feel like once you do a reimagining of somebody, then there's new rules. I mean, even with New 52, the Superman that you got in Grant Morrison's Action Comics, I mean, that was not the Superman that we knew. Nothing about him. And he was brash. He was bold. He would punch first, ask later. I mean, there were a lot of things about Superman, even in that book, that you're like, oh, wow, this is new. And you kind of just had to go with the flow of who the character was, because he's a new character that, although his name, yes, is Superman, he's not a Superman that you know.
Yeah.
But I understand what you mean, though, because if you have a preconceived notion of who this character is and they're being portrayed differently, but to me, the way I take it as, I mean, this is not the character that you know. It just happens to share the same name.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
But again, that's also me. Sometimes I can justify it in my head to the point where I don't have to, like. But also, I'm not really connected to these characters, so that's why changes like this don't really bother me. Like, I mean, I feel like it's bothering you more because it's Bendis doing it. But you've already said it yourself that you don't really care about the Legion of Superheroes either. So I feel like you shouldn't really care.
Well, no. But I know
that you dissect his books more than others.
I care more because, like, he's done it multiple times in different books already. Like, and it's not something that has happened since he got to DC. It's something that he started to recently do in the past, like, 5 months or so. That he's starting to break the fourth wall with his characters. And it's just like, we haven't gotten this for the whole year that you've been here. Why are you doing it now? You know?
I think you need to lay away from all these chat rooms.
Whoa. I'm just observing that he is starting to break the fourth wall. And it's like, do you want every character to start talking to us instead of to themselves and actually having good story, or do you just want to have a conversation with a piece of paper?
I mean, I don't mind if somebody, if it's something that he, if it becomes consistent, then okay, then it looks like that's something that's being added to a character. If it's not, and they're just doing it once just to kind of placate to conversations that he's probably had online and he just wants people to know, like, hey, I'm listening to you, then that I'm not a fan of. But if it's something that's consistent that he's adding to a character, then that's just something being added for the sake of it being added. I'm not saying I like it or not, but it's a creative choice.
Yeah, but
it has to be consistent.
But that's the thing, it hasn't been consistent. It's been with different characters in different books every single time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I need to know the example. Because I don't know what you're referring to, at least in this book, which one was a fourth wall. Like, I definitely got it with, like, the Max Lord in Leviathan. Man, has Leviathan come out, the ending?
No.
Okay, because the reason why I'm asking is because since, you know, I took that long break during the vacay, I never went back to read it. So, for example, color me surprised when I was reading Justice League 35. And I'm like, wait, the Anti-Monitor betrayed them?
Oh, yeah, you didn't read that
completely,
issue.
That completely threw me off guard. And I was like, whoa, what is happening here? I'm like, Perpetua, like, what's happening here? Wait, Doom is, like, everywhere. She's, like, even though she doesn't have all the powers of the totality, I mean, like, the Justice League is, they are, I mean, you even have moments with Batman and, with Jaro, where it's kind of looked like even him being able to read Batman's mind, it looks like even some of these heroes are acknowledging the end and like, hey, let's get ready and, you know, kind of embrace what's about to come. And I'm like, whoa, but where did Perpetua get all this power from? And I guess, man, that one issue of issue 34, I must have missed a lot, because I was totally surprised when I see her, you know, wielding this power and, you know, we're getting ready to see, I'm forgetting which Earth, I think it's Earth 19, though, because that's the Justice League incarnate, the Justice Incarnate.
Yeah.
I think is it Earth 19? 18? I want to say it's 19, but I'm not sure. And seeing, you know, that world just being knocked out, just completely wiped from existence, like she's already starting to mess with the multiverse. And I was like, whoa. And she's like, in this multiverse, there were 52 Earths, and there is now 51. I was like, holy crap. And then I'm seeing, like, Anti-Monitor in the background. And that's when I was thrown off. So I don't know if you want to quickly just educate me on what happened. Like, with the Anti-Monitor. Like, what happened that he ended up betraying his brothers? And
so, really, what ended up happening was there, of course, they were fighting. They did the whole, you know, Captain Planet, when our powers combine, turned into a Megazord or whatever. And so they were all one being as the Ultra Monitor. Ultra Monitor was fighting Perpetua. Lex Luthor was fighting Hawk Girl. And Hawk Girl was told, hey, don't use your power, you know, with her wings or whatever, until it's time. Well, yeah. Hawk Girl was like, well, F that, I'm going to use my power to kill Lex. And she used her power. She didn't kill Lex. She got distracted. She got hit. And when the tides were turning, the entire universe, or multiverse, should I say, decided to side with Doom. That's what this whole thing was about, was to make the world a little bit more grim enough for, you know, the multiverse to think, you know what, maybe it's better to side with Doom. And because of that, that is when Perpetua got a little bit more power. That's when Lex got the upper hand on Hawk Girl. And that is when the random twist of freaking the Anti-Monitor just was like, oh, yeah, by the way, guys, I was never on y'all's team. Boom. And then Perpetua changed him to his original form from back in Infinite Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Nice. Man, that one got me. I was like, oh.
It was pretty intense.
Nice.
But I want to say, the one awesome thing about this book, and while you were talking, I legit just now looked it up so that way I can change it to my background on my computer. If you look at page, are you looking at the books right now?
Yeah.
Justice League, page 9. Real quick, just look at it.
Oh, yeah. When they were just coming down and pretty much going from Gotham to Seattle, Philly.
You see Gotham, you see Seattle, you see Batwoman, Green Arrow.
I gotta admit, it was really nice seeing Catman.
Yes. Yeah. It looked awesome. Yeah. And so I legit just now looked up this to see if anybody had digitized it and put it on Google. I just now made it my screensaver for my computer. I want this as a poster.
Now, what we need is this, minus taking away the bubbles, though.
Yes, I want this as a poster. Like, I want it so bad.
It's glorious.
It's beautiful art. I really didn't have anything.
Now, are those the Manhunters in St. Petersburg?
I think they are. I had no clue.
No, I'm just the fact that it's Manhunters. I was just curious.
Yeah.
If you know, with what we believe is going to be
either
Leviathan.
Either Manhunters or something that played around with the Green Lantern Corps book, I feel like.
I believe those were the Manhunters.
Were they the Manhunters?
I believe so.
Okay.
I mean, I could be wrong, but they just kind of look like, or
they resemble.
I mean, that's St. Petersburg. That's, yeah, like, that's, I don't think that's anyone from, like, Rand or anything like that.
So,
but
like,
yeah, I thought it was.
You know, we see the rest of the, because we get to see Raven and Miss Martian talk about how they can feel the multiverse change, and they can feel how everybody's siding with Doom, and that's where Raven, or no, Miss Martian says everybody can see that symbol, and it shows that two-page spread. It shows another page where we have Justice League Odyssey's characters see the symbol of Doom. We see the Green Lantern Corps and Oa see the symbol. We see the Dark Multiverse with freaking Barbados tied up.
Yes.
We see him notice it. We see Earth 3 and the oh my gosh, I forgot what they're called. The evil Justice League.
The Crime Syndicate.
Crime Syndicate. I almost said Crime Society. So the Crime Syndicate can see the symbol, the world array, the center of the universe, multiverse, I mean, you know, where all the heroes join to have meetings.
It's always great. It's always nice seeing Captain Carrot.
You know, I always like...
I see Captain Carrot and I just think of, like, Multiversity with Grant Morrison.
Yeah, I always like when the multiverse plays around and gets to, like, you know, team up or whatever. But the most important part of this book happens right now. You know, I told Juice when we were at work, you know, there's no way that with this book being twice monthly, that Snyder can really, you know, not hold anything as far as a crisis until this summer. Like, it has to start sometime soon to get the ball rolling. And this is, like, that is this issue. The crisis is here. And I...
Which President Superman does say when he says the crisis has already begun.
Yeah. And I...
Which, that, I don't know why, but that kind of gave, like shivers. Like,
oh,
ooh,
yeah. No, geez. Dude. So, of course, I was not born to read, for the first time, Crisis on Infinite Earths back in the 80s. But I will say, this is our crisis. Like, this is genuinely our crisis on Infinite Earths. Because...
Yeah, I mean, I have a shameful admission with Crisis on Infinite Earths, since you mentioned it. When I was getting into comics, one thing when you're getting into comic books, art, I think, is a really big deal. When you don't know the characters, you want the book to at least look pretty.
Yes.
I can honestly say that a friend of mine let me borrow his trade of Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Mark, what are you say right now?
Listen. Shut your face. He said, Mark, this book is the most important literature that you will read for DC Comics. And I said,
I can agree.
Give it to me. I opened the book. I gave it two pages, and I said, this art sucks.
Oh.
You have zero chance of having me read this book.
Oh,
and
my God.
I think now, well, let me preface it. I've read the book. Now, I didn't read it then, because I don't think my mind could have comprehended what happened there. But I did read it years later, and holy crap.
You should be getting your box set in.
Oh, I'm getting it very soon, my little box set. I'm like, love it.
Man.
Give it to me. But yeah, I can say that as somebody who now loves George Perez, and that is prime George Perez, I feel very guilty when the first time I read it. I can even say that this same buddy gave me The Dark Knight Returns. And I opened the pages,
and it was
and I
gross.
Said, I was like, this book, you expect me to read this book with this art? Bro, get that. Bro, you're giving me the worst comics.
Dude, Dark Knight Returns is not the greatest art, and I'm not a huge fan of Frank Miller, so.
No, I know, but it was like something is just, in terms of like just reading the book, like that book pretty much, you know, created a long lineage of like future stories that we see because of that, and creators because of stories, but it was just, no, Frank Miller does not draw nice at all. At all. That dude sucks. Like, that guy's worse than Romita. Like, I, like I can say that with, you know, man. Like, I don't have any, with nothing. I mean, at least Romita can draw maybe one panel surprising you. I don't think Miller has that in him, but, I mean, that man can tell a story.
Wow.
Well, he used to.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well,
anyways, all right, we can go
back.
I'm
going to go ahead and knock on wood, because I don't want this to happen, but... The day when our unfortunate, awesome artist, George Perez, kicks the bucket, I'm going to say, hey, Mark, remember that time you hated his book?
No, I actually, I went to Florida SuperCon, and I told him, I was like, listen, because I had him sign when I bought, like, you know, because I have now, like, a hardcover.
Yeah.
But I mean, I still, that box set looks way too beautiful and has like everything. So I needed that omnibus collection set. But when I gave him the trade, this hardcover to sign, I'm like, listen, I need you to know that the first time that I'll take a picture of when I met him. And I was like, I need you to know that when you're signing this book, when I initially had it, when a friend gave it to me, I thought this book looked atrocious.
You did not tell him that.
I did. Oh. Like, he was actually, George Perez is probably one of the sweetest guys that I know in terms of
going to conventions. I've met him before. I've talked to him. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, I've met him like three times, and I told him, I need you to know that when I was getting into comics and somebody told me I need to read this book to understand DC, I told him I couldn't because the art was atrocious. But I want you to know that, you know, 10 years later into reading comics, I love this book and I love your work. And I, at the same time, I gave him that book and he signed my Superman number one, the New 52.
Yeah.
Because he was doing it with Juergens.
Oh, that's...
No, not Juergens. No, he was writing Superman.
Yeah, he was writing...
With Jesus Marino.
Yeah.
Marino was doing the art. And I was like... And, you know, I gave him that book as well to sign. But I was like, I had to tell him because, I don't know, I just felt... Well, first he was, like, really nice, but I wanted him to know that, you know, I was one of those fans that couldn't stand it, but then... I grew to absolutely love that book. Yeah.
But, you know, speaking, you know, about the crisis and everything, Perpetua goes to this world and she says...
The Promethean galaxy.
Yeah, she says...
Oh, or you're talking about Earth 19.
Yeah, she says, this Earth, this entire universe, it has been stunted, held back to an enormous, more primitive age. The fog of industry chokes its people who huddle in its gaslight, and yet still it clings to the misguided notions of justice. So every other Earth in the multiverse had already sided with Doom, except for Earth 19. Earth 19 was still grasping onto the idea of justice, and all of a sudden we see, she already said it, gaslight. We see Gotham by Gaslight's Batman and Commissioner Gordon. And, you know, Gordon's like, what?
Excuse me. Inspector Gordon.
Inspector Gordon was just like, what in the world is this? What's going on? And Batman says, you know, hey, Gordon, I just want you to know there are other worlds out there. You know, there is, you know, a plethora of galaxies.
Yeah, there's other versions of me and versions of you. Yeah.
And so he calls. He has one device that is able to connect with the multiverse, and he's calling in for backup. No one's answering. And then all of a sudden...
The tension was...
Dude, it made, like... It got me goosebumps. I was like, what's going to happen?
Seeing him, like, go, and seeing Batman run after the little boy who was, like, by himself.
Oh,
was,
dude.
Like, close your eyes.
So...
I was like, oh, God, this
so
is...
So Perpetua slams her staff into the ground. She is, like, Godzilla size at this point. And, you know... Everything is starting to crack. There's a huge light. You know, Batman tells this boy, don't look back. He huddles him, covers him with his cape. And then Perpetua says, you know, with the creation of the multiverse, there were 52 Earths. Now there are 51.
Oh yeah.
When she said that, I was like, oh my God. Like, and it's awesome because I think Francis Manapul really wanted to get the feeling of back in the Crisis on Infinite Earths feeling. And, mm-hmm. you know, that, like, white light and the cracks and how basically the pages are tearing apart. And it looks awesome. This was a surprise read for me. You know, we've been getting the back and forth of Hawkgirl and Lex fighting for the last, like, 3 issues. So I was just like, oh, it's going to be more of that, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, the Hawkgirl with Shane and, you know, Batman, I mean, it kind of hurts because, I mean, you don't really know what their fate's going to be. But, like, seeing Batman saying, like, I promise we'll get you back.
And
like it's one of those things that you see what happened in Earth 19 with Batman with the little boy, and now this is kind of like now with the current and a Batman kind of like reassuring a little boy.
Yeah, and then
although yes, he's a Martian,
and then freaking
and then it fails because Lex was able to sense that they were
Was able to sense, and then Perpetua was able to see, and you know with her limited power, she was still able to destroy like an engine off the ship. And now they're just, like, lost in oblivion. Like, lost
and
in
now
space.
Perpetua has now officially unleashed Lex with whatever power he needs to go and kill them all. So, and you have, you know, the little tease, you know, Lex takes the throne. And I'm like, ooh, okay, all right. Let's see. We haven't really seen what this Apex Luthor can do. We saw little bits against, like, Martian Manhunter, but nothing really serious. I want to see now with Perpetua, and I love Perpetua's eyes.
Yes.
They're just absolutely terrifying. But I'm curious to see what are we going to see now with Perpetua and Lex.
And, you know,
or what Perpetua gives Lex.
Yeah, and, you know, we keep getting this feeling. You know, we've had this feeling for quite some time. I've talked to you about it. I've talked to Juice about it. You know, our heroes are getting beaten down to a pulp, as like emotionally.
I don't think they have won at all. No, like, there's little win in this entire Justice League run.
Yes, they have not won a single. Like, they haven't had a time to be like, oh yeah, today we won. I think the only time that has happened was when Superman reconstructed the moon. That was the only time. And that was like,
yeah. I mean, they had like a very minor victory against like the sixth dimension.
Yes,
but it was like, but that brought them back just to go through all this crap that this has been building up throughout that time.
Yeah.
So it was like kind of like a victory, but one that you couldn't really celebrate because, you know, things are just that bad.
Yeah. They didn't have time to celebrate. So, but speaking of our heroes losing. Oh, man. I've had conversations with Juice about this book. You know, he is a very big Batman fan. And at one point, our conversation turned into, well, I'm going to defend Batman. Well, he's going to defend Batman while I defend Superman. And because he was like, oh, well, that's just like this and that's just like that. And, you know, it became this big thing at work. And it's... I'm glad that it's causing conversation, but my God, this book, dude.
The Inferior Five?
No, of course, I am talking about Batman 82, City of Bane, or should I say City of Thomas Wayne, because that is something that people have speculated throughout this whole thing. You know, who was pulling the strings? You know, was it, you know, Bane for real, or was it actually Ventriloquist? Was it Thomas Wayne? What exactly is it? Who is the bad guy? And we see here that Bane was basically just the muscle. And it, you know, this whole thing with the whole fight with Catwoman, Bruce, Bane, You know, it was a cool fight scene, I will say. The callback to Die Hard with the batarangs taped to his back was, you know, a little funny. It was a cool nod. But I will say, I don't think this is Mikael Janin's best work.
Well, I would say that the first page is some of his better, like, best work. I thought that the first page with the little breakthrough, the breakdowns,
yeah,
I thought was glorious. I think that the Thomas Wayne ventriloquist stuff was a little bit more, you rushed. Know, I think that it was more about let's focus on Bruce, Selina, and Bane, while this other part can, you know, obviously do what you do, but it's the detail that you're seeing there is not to that Janin level. But everything I saw between Bruce and Bane, I loved. And I have to say, I was really psyched for this book. I was like, finally, okay, we're done with this Romita stuff. I'm like, let's go. We got four issues. Wait, 82, 83, 84, 85. Yeah, four issues. Let's go. Can we just get some balls to the wall, but tight? Let's, if there are any subtle loose ends in a way, let's hope that we get those done in a way, but in between of, you know, everything that's going on in the background. And I gotta say, I actually did not enjoy the fight at all. I thought that they were talking. I don't like when there's a lot of talking during a fight.
One thing that, you know, this was, you know, Catwoman was talking the entire time. And this is basically, for everybody who is married, I feel like really got this. People who aren't married probably didn't get this. This is Catwoman being condescending and saying, oh, Bruce, you said this and you said that. It's a couple, you know, being condescending to each other and just being like, oh, you said this and you said that, you know? And because she says at one point, she says, where is it? You know, on this like 13 panel page or whatever. You know, she's saying
that Bane wouldn't use like the super, Gotham Girl's like super venom.
And she's like, she's going back on the conversation. She's like, well, Bat, why don't you just ask him? No way, Cat. That's so dumb. He's too smart for all that. And then Bruce says, hey, I never said smart. And at that point, you realize all this banter that Catwoman is doing. Oh, okay. She's being that, you know, that couple. And I mean,
I can also see that, you know, she's using her words as a strategy because, you know, when you're just constantly hearing somebody talk, I mean, that can throw somebody off their game.
Yeah.
So it's also disorienting. I don't think that that's what she was doing because I know that King likes to go into these little witty banters. Like, he likes to do that because this is, like, his version of humor. So I don't think it, even though the way I read it, sometimes I take it as a step further, which is outside, which is like, I can see this being a smart strategy that while he's focusing on Bruce, you know, you got like the person that could be just as dangerous, just talking and being annoying, that can kind of throw you off. But I don't think that's what it was, but I take it for my own headcanon. But yeah, I was really, you know, I will say that one of my favorite parts was when Bane looked like he was defeated, and you're seeing kind of, this was like the whole I am suicide and I am Bane.
Yes, the callback.
You had that moment of the callback. That was glorious because you had when Batman was getting his butt whooped during I am Bane in Arkham. This was a very important panel where he says, like, after everything you've done, you have blah, 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 you know, I'm still here. Well, you have the same one with this, where you get the callbacks from I Am Suicide on how Bane was raised when they were doing the comparisons between Bruce being raised by Alfred and what would happen if when Bane and his parents died, like how he was raised.
Yeah.
So I thought that this was really strong, and these were like the nice little callbacks that, you know, like whenever you're getting close to a series finale, there's always like an episode that does like a really clever job. I mean, I always go with like The Office, when Dunder Mifflin was sold to Saber, and they had like the HR guy from that company want a fact check, and he's asking Toby questions, and they're just doing flashbacks of everything that Toby's pretty much lying, and he gives, and then they show you like reasons.
Yeah,
I kind of like that we were getting that in this, but you know, seeing him absolutely mess up. I'm really curious because there is a moment here with Bane and Catwoman where Catwoman's actually messing him up. And it looks like she clearly, based on her words, it looks like she clearly ripped his tongue out.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't show it, but the fact when she says, like, Cat got your tongue, I feel that there's a moment that something happened there. Then there is this other moment where I don't know if it's him being clever with lighting, but when Bane actually throws Selina to the ground, I mean to the wall, you can hear that instead of you're hearing crack.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel, and even looking at it, that either Selina broke her neck.
Or she's dead.
Well, that's not going to happen. I mean, with the whole Bat-Cat book, I don't...
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to elaborate on that, but...
Yeah. So, it makes me wonder, okay, like, what condition is she in this? To then the point where you're seeing the moment that it looks like they have been referencing this for, you know, for God knows how long. I mean, I think since I Am Suicide,
yeah,
with Batman going, I am going to break your damn back. I think that there was... I mean, there has been so many... Even I Am Bane felt like the reverse of Nightfall.
Yeah.
Where it feels like this has been one of Tom King's things where it was always leading to this moment where we were going to get to this moment. And that's when the whole... That's when the twist happens.
Yeah, so yeah. Thomas comes in. You know, because for one, you know, let's go all the way back to the beginning where we see Thomas talking to Ventriloquist. And so when this happens, you know, we see the very first page of the breakdown between Bane and Batman, you know, taking off the masks. Yeah. That was awesome. Then we see Ventriloquist and Thomas. And Ventriloquist, is there anything you require? And Thomas says, yes, Ventriloquist, and he, like, slaps him. I was like, oh, snap, Thomas is going to, like, turn, and he's going to be a good guy, and it's going to be awesome. And then all of a sudden, I require my boy. I'm like, what? I don't know what just happened. Like, that really confused me.
Yeah, the slap doesn't really make sense.
It really doesn't.
Because why would you just slap him in the face? It kind of makes me feel like, man, how was Thomas with
Bruce?
You know, the Alfred.
Or Alfred, yeah.
Yeah, or yeah, like, or Martha. I mean, was Bruce really the only reason why she turned to, like, Joker? It kind of makes me wonder, like, man, who was he really?
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can kind of see Tom on social media always trying to justify that, man, Thomas is a really bad dude.
Well, yeah, and people say, you know, you have to remember, he's a hardened Batman that had his family killed, and he uses guns, he kills people, like, in the Flashpoint universe, so you shouldn't expect him to be anything less than that. And I understand that.
I mean, with hardened, but I also don't expect where he's like, is there anything else you require?
Pack. Yeah, yeah. Just, is there anything you face. Is there anything you require? Whoopah! Tea. Like,
yeah,
like,
like, I'm not saying ventriloquist. I mean, ventriloquist is not a, you know, little, an innocent little flower. No, the ventriloquist is a bad dude, but it was just, it's one of those things that, I don't know, it kind of just threw me off that
yeah.
It's a weird way to show dominance or something.
So that was that. And then, of course, you see him show up. He shoots Bruce in the stomach twice, and then you see him say, son. And just like how you said, you know, you felt that Catwoman tore out Bane's tongue. Well, if you look at how he's trying to talk and speak Thomas's name, he says, Thomas, like...
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think she did slash his tongue. And Thomas shoots him in the head, kills him, dead. Like, I don't see how anybody can think, oh, the venom is going to peel him, he's fine. Like,
That bothered me.
He killed Bane, and the very next panel, you look at everybody on the floor, Catwoman, like, you see the blood on the wall all the way to the point where she, like, the blood is trickling down to her body.
Yeah.
Bruce is lying there with blood falling from his guts, you know, and Bane shot in the head. And I just looked at this panel, I'm like, okay, and enter Skeets. Because that's what I thought. Hey, you know what? next issue, Skeets is going to reverse time. This is where we're going to get the story of Flashpoint Batman and how he got in this time and everything else. Now, I had this conversation with Juice. He thinks that everybody is fine in this picture. Like, everybody is going to come back alive. Like, nobody's dead. And everything's, you know, just for the dramatic of being dramatic. And I think that lessens the idea of Thomas holding a gun. And I understand the stretching of disbelief in comics. Don't get me wrong. I understand people get shot all the time. But when you get shot in the head, you know, I looked it up. There's about a 5% chance to live from a shot through the brain. When Bane throws Catwoman into the wall, you hear the giant crack. So either her neck or her back, and her neck, her back, and or both are broken.
Yeah.
Her eyes are rolling in the back of her head. There's blood everywhere. Like, I can, the only person I can see possibly surviving this on a whim would be Bruce, because he's been shot in the stomach before. But in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, Skeets is going to come next, and we're going to fix all this, and, you know, that's what's going to happen. But...
Well, which really makes me wonder, because we all know what Psycho Pirate can do, and we know what his powers are. So the fact that now Psycho Pirate, who has been a player in the background since I Am Gotham, there's something about him that you've seen little moments of why he's being used, but I'm really curious what they're going to do with Psycho Pirate to kind of change, you know, the atmosphere of what's going on.
Yeah.
But when I see a tragic discovery, it makes me just believe that we're going to be seeing a chained up Batman, and that's when he's going to learn about Alfred.
Well, yeah, because the very next issue is called A Tragic Discovery.
Yeah, so I truly believe that, you know, this was... He's going to find out, we're going to see that it's true, that Alfred is indeed gone. And, I mean, it's going to be a tough one. I mean, I've been saying it on the chat that I believe that this story was going to end with Batman killing Thomas. And that was going to be the generational thing. I mean, I'm still under that belief that this will end, and I don't know how people are going to accept that. But, I mean, we'll see. Because, again, you know, with James Tynion, maybe, you know, he might never touch on that, and it might only be getting touched on in The Bat and Cat. Who knows? But, you know, I'm still going on that limb that, you know, Batman will kill his father.
Yeah. I think the generational change is the death of Alfred. But I think now, with all of this, I think that the survival of Flashpoint Batman, I don't think it's going to happen. I think he has to die. If he sends him back to the Flashpoint timeline, Thomas will just find a way back. And I don't want that. I don't want there to be, you know... I don't want him to become a Batman who laughs, you know, to where he's...
No, I think he needs to go like Jor-El did.
Yeah.
So if it's one of those things where he gets pushed, he gets thrown back in, I mean, I don't want it to happen the same way where it happens like before Flashpoint happened and he gets to see Martha as the Joker and tell him like, oh, Bruce is fine. Ugh. I don't want that. Like, but I truly believe that he's going to be gone, and this is, you know, they introduce like the fathers for these... You know, these two main characters who have never lived with their father or known their fathers, really.
Yeah.
And I think like that's what this is. But I don't know. I did not like the fact that, I mean, when you mentioned Skeets, I was like, man, I forgot that Skeets was in that picture at the end of Batman 50.
Yep.
So.
Ooh, and it's such a
Tom King thing to do, to kind of like make this be like it was all something. And this was like the Psycho Pirate that a long time ago, and we never saw it, that he ended up like saying some certain word to these characters that they have just been in like some sort of, you know, thinking something else has been going on. And that would really, that would bother that none of this really held that kind of weight. It also doesn't make sense with how is that possible that this is happening? Because then it really tells you that there's no continuity.
Oh, well, and that's the thing, you know, a lot of people think that Tom King writes with no consequences because he just does things like this. And for me, you know, I don't want it to be, you know, I assume that Skeets is going to come next issue and, you know, fix all this and we're going to get that backstory. But I also see it as Tom King is going to put Skeets in the next issue just to explain everything. And then we're all supposed to be like, okay, that makes sense. You know?
I don't know, man. There's been too many. There's been too many of explanation issues.
Yeah.
Where when you're now three away, I don't want one.
Oh, and but see, I mean we've
already had that really long one that happened, I think, before the Romita stuff. You know, the whole the Batman like pretty much telling you like, oh, I did this so that this can happen, this happened, so this can happen. I mean, we already had like that Doomsday Clock 11 issue where you have like the entire history lesson of a run.
But that's the issue. People want that still. They want the explanation. So Tom King is going to give it to them, and there's going to be people that ramp and rave about it being the best ending of a run ever, where we're just seeing somebody, oh, well, I saw you complain about this, so I'll acknowledge it in the last issue. Oh, I saw you complain about that, so I'm going to acknowledge it in this last issue.
That would be really disappointing. I was already disappointed because although... Yeah, I don't like how it ended. I loved how much Tom King honored Bane. And how Bane really seemed to have... I think people really underestimate how smart he really is and how calculated he really is.
Yeah.
And it was just disappointed that at the end, he was just used as muscle. Which a lot of, you know, sometimes lazy writers just put Bane so that they can have the crazy roided out monster.
Yeah.
To provide like a physical threat. But not know that. So I don't want to say that Thomas did everything, but it kind of seems like he did when you saw the way that he controlled it. Now that, you know, we were getting like he knows that the end game is near, and it looks like he this is him truly showing his colors, and everything else has just been like a calculated, like a little bit of theater.
Yeah.
So seeing him just shoot him in the head, I was like. It just like he got baned again.
Yep.
Like, and that one hurt because I felt that, you know, Tom King was doing something that many people don't do, which is honor just how smart and how dangerous he truly is. And, you know, you get something like this.
Yeah, so, it sucks. But I mean,
yeah.
It's all going to be revamped in a year anyway. And,
yeah, I mean, like I'm still to this day. I mean, I know that sometimes Tom King, with the way that he ends stories, are much to be desired. But I mean, we're not done yet. We got three issues left. But I'm not gonna poo-poo on just because the ending is not going the, you know, it feels like it's falling a little flat.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna be discouraged over how much I've enjoyed reading his work since 2016. Like, I've loved Batman. And so it's one of those things, like, you know, it can end a little soft, but, like, the third act hasn't been strong since, like, Nightmares to me. But, I mean, I want to also keep in mind, I'm like, man, this is the first book that I read every single time it comes out. Because I've loved what Tom King has done, and I kind of want like the listeners to know that too. Like, I really do enjoy his work, and I don't want it to be that the ending is like this poo-poo parade, because I'm not there. I'm 100% appreciative of what I've been reading until this day. I mean, I know that there are Tom King haters. I am most definitely not one of them. This is not entirely the story that I was kind of wanting, but again, it's not my story. It's his story, but it's, you know, it just feels a little jumbled here at the end. And again, I don't know if it's because of the cut of 15 issues. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
But I mean, we'll see. We'll just have to see what happens. But, I mean, I'll be damned, like, if by the time this run ends, I'm not going to have positive things to say about it. Like, this has been a really fun, you know, 3 years of reading comics.
Oh, yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. I of course, everybody knows that I jumped in on 50 and then went back to read 1 through 49 as I was reading it ongoing after 50. And I enjoyed it. I really did. The only one that I really didn't, you know, enjoy all that well was the Nightmares. I got a little frustrated with those, but, you know.
That one was,
You know, besides that, I've been enjoying it, and there's been, you know, and it's ups and downs like any other comic book series. I just want him to stick the landing.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that he doesn't always. His endings are usually quite vague, and they're usually kind of in a way. You want to say it's open to interpretation, but sometimes I mean, one of the things that I always say is that Scott Snyder, especially with New 52, I always loved his beginnings of the stories, but sometimes his endings were kind of like,
mm-hmm.
with his stories. I mean, I think it's really hard just to end the story, so it's like, I'm not totally optimistic that it's going to have a great ending. I think it's going to be very vague, but I'm just kind of hoping that the stuff in between leading to that ending is enough where you can kind of make that conclusion yourself. The worst is when there's a conclusion, but you have too many loose things that you're like, oh, like what? What happened? So that's what I'm hoping for. But overall, I mean, I thought the book looked pretty.
Yeah.
Mainly, you know, everything besides the Thomas and ventriloquist stuff. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. It was definitely a really, really fast read.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I read this super quick.
I think I read it like in 4 minutes. I was like, man, this is like, I'm done. So I think it's one of those where I'm like, okay, so there's not much. I think it's important to kind of see maybe what Janin is doing in his art. And that's when I noticed Selena and it showed the crack. I'm like, oh, okay. The cat got your tongue. I'm like, did she rip his tongue out? I'm like, okay. But it was really like, I was like, okay, this is interesting. All right, they're fighting. I figured it was going to be an ugly fight, and then the gunshot happened, and then the headshot. I was like, oh. Like, those were my emotions. I was like, oh, man, all right, this is quick. All right, what's Thomas doing here? Okay, ventriloquist actually looks kind of scared with whatever. I mean, it could be him still overcoming the haymaker. But I'm like, all right. I'm like, okay, let me see what's going on here. I'm like, oh, he's Bane.
Yep.
Anyways.
But
those are the books.
Yeah, and I actually have a question for our listeners for this episode.
Okay, go ahead.
So, you know, we discussed about Justice League, you know, and the death of Earth 19. What characters, since this is the crisis, we can assume Earth 19 will not be the only Earth to fall and to be destroyed. Which Earth would you not mind being destroyed? And what Earth do you not want to get destroyed? Like, what Earth needs to stay in continuity, needs to be a part of the multiverse? And what Earth can just be like, yeah, you can destroy that. You know?
Do you have one?
I do not want Earth 2, of course. Because Earth 2 is still a thing, right? Or do you we assume that it's still a thing because of what we saw in the earlier issues of Justice League with the bottled cities or whatever, the bottled Earths?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm still taking it that Earth 2 is still something.
Yeah.
In its limited capacity.
Yeah. So Earth 2, I need there to be some hope that we may see a Earth 2 book again. So I want Earth 2 to stay in contact.
Like continuity?
Yeah, and in continuity. One Earth that I wouldn't mind just being shoved to the side or being destroyed. And this one's going to hurt for what we just talked about. Captain Carrot's Earth, I wouldn't mind.
Really? Okay. I mean, I am like, don't touch Earth 22. That, like, that's my kingdom come.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I need that. That's some of my favorite characters. Honestly, the one that I don't really have too much connections with is, I mean, I'll be okay, like, if Earth 1 went.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know? Like, I'm okay with Earth 1, because I'm trying to look here. I was like, man, no, I like Earth 5, because that's, like, all Thunderworld. Earth 7, I mean, if you want to go Earth 7, you can go, which is, like, kind of, it's, I don't know why, but Earth 7 is kind of, like, a little nod to, like, Marvel characters, just kind of created differently. So if you want to officially just, if you want to officially just kill off any kind of Marvel, Marvel ties to DC, just knock off, like, Earth 7. See you later.
Yeah.
Get out of here, losers. Where, like, Thor, I think he's, like, the,
wait,
the Thunderer.
Is it Earth 7 or Earth 8?
I it could be either of
those.
I
think it's Earth 8. Earth 8 is the one with the, because those characters actually showed up in Flash Forward, issue number 2. It's Earth 8.
Yes, okay. So then, yeah, Earth 8 then. Okay, I thought it was 7, but all right, yeah. That's fine. You know, get rid of them. We don't need no Marvel ties to DC. Just get out of here. But yeah, with that being said, we're gonna wrap up the show. We would love to know what your answers are on Earth that you would love to be, to, you know, stay saved, or, you know, get out of here. Let Perpetua just, you know, go over there to that Earth and wipe them out. But with that being said, you can find me at Mark Reads Comics on Twitter. You can also, if you want to chat with either myself or Clay, just go to CB_Legion. And that will be our podcast page. Besides that, Clay, where can they find you?
You can find me, of course, on Twitter and on Instagram, at Fanboy Clay. You can find the Fanboy Comics podcast on Twitter at Fanboy Comics Pod. You can find, Mark also does a fantasy football show, FFL Pod, on Twitter. But yeah, please answer us on these questions. I'm actually looking at these Earths, and I wouldn't mind Earth 30 being destroyed either. That's the Red Sun Superman.
Okay.
But I would want to keep Earth 11, which is the gender bend Earth, where there is a female Superman or Superwoman, a female Batwoman and all that. So I think that would be kind of cool. I want to, like, read more about these guys, you know? I wouldn't mind there being, like, random one-shots every once in a while about these Earths.
Well, I think that's what made Multiversity so important. I think that it gave you that opportunity of jumping into these different Earths. And, I mean, Grant Morrison's still, little by little, he still talks about that number two's coming, but I don't know, you know, it's one of those things that you don't really know what DC's doing, so it's...
Yeah, we'll see.
It's kind of, it's all over the place. But before we go, just wanted to make sure that this show is brought to you. We are a part of the Nerdy Legion podcast. I did forget that last week.
Yes.
I apologize vehemently to Martin on our fantasy football, because Jake reminded me, because I no longer remember how to podcast. So yes, go to nerdylegion.com, check out the podcast. You got everything from us doing DC or fantasy football. You have guys like Fred doing Indie Alley, where they talk about a lot of the independent books. You have Martin with the Nerdy Legion or Aftershock. They even have Valiant Central podcast. So you get a plethora there of just a lot of cool nerdy content. So nerdylegion.com. Besides that, we will talk to you guys next week. Oh, and you know what? Clay, we should actually, whenever you're doing your fanboy, I mean, I'll have to reread it, but we should definitely do a Crisis on Infinite Earths fanboy podcast. Let's do that, because I'm definitely not watching the show. So, but we can at least talk the comic. That's a story I'm interested in.
Yeah, I'll have to take it back out. You know, I was just recently looking at it to compare the Earth 19 getting it destroyed. So, yeah, I'll definitely do it.
Sweet. Awesome. So, there you go. Tease. Talk to you guys later.
See ya.